Hello. In this audio snippet, we're going to continue talking about some of the concepts we have been sharing on in recent audio clips regarding the individual and the collective. And I'd like to first read a story that that was out last week, but I felt the strong need that it was worth kind of going over again because of some details that are worth pointing out. I'm going to read from an article posted on Fox News. It was posted on or published on May 9th. In other words, that would have been, well, it was actually this week. But it's about the story that we've talked about already. And the title of it is Jordan Neely Had History of Attacks on Subway Riders Before NYC Chokehold Death. Neely's death has sparked widespread protests across the city and more than a dozen arrests. So a whole bunch of nonsense has been going on here in New York, in the New York area, because of what happened. So again, all the liberals have been using this as a way to through demagoguery just move people to claim that there was a certain injustice that was not really there. Because everything is from, in their world, is from the racial perspective. Everything is race, and they need to feed that agenda to keep their religion, their ideology alive. So they have to artificially create crises and tragedies to continue with the deception. And that goes to the wider issue of what this former Marine did by killing this man. By trying to subdue this man. He thought he was controlling this one man, but he was not fighting a single man. He was fighting a whole system, a whole invisible power. But he was fighting it with visible tools, and that is the problem of conservatives. They don't understand the invisible. It's a problem they constantly have. They see the visible problem, and they try to deal with it visibly with visible means, without realizing that you're fighting an enemy that you can't fight with visible weapons. But because they have this tunnel vision, they think that only what they can see is what is out there. And that's why they can't win. That's why no matter how much they try, how many efforts they make, they will never defeat the other side, because the other side is operating through mechanisms that are invisible, that are intangible. It's much larger than just a simple visible problem. And that's why they will never win. It's like trying to fight a windstorm with a, I don't know why the term came to my head, a shovel. I'm not sure what that means, but it's like the wind is coming at you and you're trying to fight it off or shovel it away. Or, you know, it's as if you had this flood that's coming at you, and you're trying to deal with it one bucket of water at a time. It's not going to work. You're using the wrong weapons to deal with the problem, because you don't understand the problem. And that's why, for example, conservatives are so focused on the Second Amendment and weapons, and they will never take my weapon away from me. My Second Amendment rights is what keeps America free compared to Europe. And they say all these slogans, all this nonsense. And I always say to myself, well, you still have your weapon with you, but the liberals are taking over the country and destroying it anyway. So what is your weapon? That gun, that magnum or whatever you have there doing on your behalf. It's not doing anything because you can't fight that enemy with bullets. But they don't understand that. That's the same thing, for example, with the problems in Black America that we had for decades and decades. And because they were happening in Black neighborhoods, outside of the realm of where, you know, quite conservatives would live or have an awareness, then it just wasn't there. The problem wasn't there. And then when the rage and all the thing that has been built up inside those boiling pots spills over into the rest of society, that's when conservatives begin to notice and begin to complain on how to deal with it. But they'd never dealt with the problem that was there that you couldn't see unless you were paying attention. And once you identify that there's a problem, then you have to deal with it and fight it as if with the awareness that it is an invisible problem. There are invisible roots there beneath the surface that you have to deal with. And that attitude would have helped to resolve the problems in Black America. And it would have made Black America aware that conservatives or Republicans, more specifically, cared about them. But Republicans did not care about them because Republicans and conservatives are always focused on the visible. They are like pigs with their face down on the ground, always looking down. Pigs physically cannot look up to the sky, as far as I know. So that's how conservatives have lived their lives. And that's why the country is dying. There were fundamental problems in our structure, how the country was built from the foundation. But because those problems were, quote, invisible, because they were in the foundation, you can't see the foundation. But you see the house beginning to tilt, and you see some problems. You see some indications that there's something not right. But as long as the house is still kind of like standing, you pretend like everything is okay and keep going. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that attitude... attitude, American attitude that I find so abhorrent in our culture. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, don't deal with underlying issues. Just, you know, if on the surface everything is fine, just forget about it. And that's what has us where we are now. Let me start reading here from the story here on Fox News. It says, Jordan Neely had a troubling history of violent attacks on strap hangers in New York City before the disturbed man reportedly threatened passengers, and Marine vet Daniel Penny allegedly put him in a fatal chokehold. The 30-year-old vagrant, who once performed as a Michael Jackson impersonator, had been arrested dozens of times, including most recently for vicious assaults on subway riders, court records show. In 2021, Neely socked a 67-year-old woman as she exited the Bowery station in the East Village in Lower Manhattan. The woman sustained a broken nose, a fractured orbital bone, and bruising and swelling, quote, bruising, swelling, and substantial pain to the back of her head, unquote, in the November 12th attack, according to a criminal complaint. That was in 2021. Imagine a 67-year-old woman, a frail, vulnerable, older woman. She was just exiting the station, and she was attacked. And apparently, I would imagine, I venture to guess, it was an completely unprovoked and surprise attack on her. So Neely, it says here, pleaded guilty to felony assault February 9th. In exchange for a 15-month alternative to incarceration, alternative to incarceration program, according to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, he was supposed to stay in a treatment facility and abstain from drugs. This happened apparently between 2021 and the start of 2022. So it's not that long ago, and by then, you know, we had. The just the increasing decay of the city, which basically started around 2014, when son of a bitch, worthless bastard, hellbound bastard, Bill de Blasio, or officially known as Bill de Blasio, was elected mayor of New York. That's when the death of New York kind of started, and the full-blown death of New York. And so we're talking about late into this death stage that we've been witnessing here in New York, 2021-2022, where we the New York City became much more lax on crime than it already had become, and so they just let him go, and just imagine that he brutally attacked a woman. And I would dare, I don't know why I have this feeling, the woman was white, and that must have contributed to him being released, because, of course, you know, he had a history of arrests already, but even so, they let him go. So it was, he was let go on a, in exchange for a 15-month alternative to incarceration program. You know, what the hell is that? Pardon my French. What the hell is that? Alternative to incarceration program. And he was supposed to stay in a treatment facility and abstain from drugs. So it says, if he had completed the program, the felony assault would have been reduced to a misdemeanor, but he skipped a compliance court date and left the facility. A warrant was issued for his arrest on February 23rd. It wasn't immediately clear how long he spent in jail awaiting the resolution of the assault case. It says here, the troubled man, who has a history of mental illness and drug addiction, had a difficult upbringing. His mother was strangled by her boyfriend in 2007 and found stuffed in a suitcase in the Bronx. Imagine that. So his mother was strangled by her boyfriend almost 16 years ago. 2007 was kind of a very strange or difficult period, I would dare say. It was towards the end of things in New York started getting well when Giuliani took over. I forget when that was. It was the mid-90s or late 90s. And it went into the 2000s, and then Bloomberg, another Republican at the time, mayor, took over and continued the policies of Giuliani, and New York just was in this state of peace, of prosperity. It got cleaned up pretty strongly because it was being prepared for something great. But then time went on, and around 2006, 2007, Bloomberg began to turn. He began to show that he was not really the man he projected himself as, because he had projected himself as kind of a continuation of Giuliani, because he knew Giuliani was so popular, but he was like a liberal Democrat in hiding, in disguise, in a sense. So I remember it was around 2006, 2007 that he became more and more fascistic with certain nonsense. He began to obsess about banning the size of certain types of soft drinks. Like if you took that, because that was unhealthy. So he started obsessing about stupidities and things like that. And it was around this time that this fellow's mother was strangled and found stuffed in a suitcase in the Bronx. And by my calculations, I gather he must have been around, if he was 30 around this time, then he was probably 14 years old, when around 13, 14 years old when this happened to his mother. So he had a troubled childhood, but And then it says here, court records show that as an adult, Neely regularly lashed out at strangers on the subway and on the street from January 20th to August 2021. He was arrested for public lewdness after pulling down his pants and exposing himself to a female stranger, misdemeanor assault for hitting a woman in the face, and criminal contempt for violating a restraining order. All three cases were dismissed as part of his February 9th plea deal. And in June 2019, Neely attacked... So this is 2019, so it's going back a little in time. Neely attacked Philemon Castillo Balthazar, 68. So he kind of liked to target older people, apparently, on the platform of the West 4th Street Station in Greenwich Village, according to the court papers. Quote, out of nowhere, he punched me in the face, unquote, the victim told the New York Daily News. He said he'd seen Neely before looking for food in the trash bins. 1 month prior, he hit a man so hard in the face that he broke his nose on the platform of the Broadway Lafayette station, the same subway stop where he died 4 years later. And that is interesting to me. I have the feeling that when he hit that man, he hit a person he should not have messed with. And that's why in a certain kind of fitting justice, and speaking of social justice, he died on that same station 4 years later. For both 2019 cases, he pleaded guilty to misdemeanor assault and was sentenced to 6 months in jail. Outreach workers were so familiar with Neely that he was on the city's, quote, top 50, unquote, list. An internal roster kept by the Department of Homeless Services of people living on the street who are most in need of help, the New York Post reported. He had cycled in and out of hospitals and jails for years. Neely's tragic death unfolded May 1st at about 2:30 p.m. after he boarded an F train screaming and threatening passengers, according to a freelance journalist who recorded the confrontation. Penny grabbed him from behind, dragged him to the ground, and allegedly wrapped his arm around his neck until he lost consciousness and died. I don't know why they say allegedly wrapped his arm around his neck. The video is out there. You see him. He didn't allegedly wrap his arm around his neck. He actually, you know, he did wrap his arm around his neck in a chokehold move until he lost consciousness and died. Penny hasn't been criminally charged. Well, as it turns out, he was arrested. I think it was yesterday or today, or you know, recently. Not today. It must have been yesterday or the day before that he was put in handcuffs and arrested by the Uncle Tom DA here in New York. So it says here, Penny's attorneys, Stephen Reiser and Thomas Kenneth, argued that Penny had acted in self-defense to protect himself and other riders and could not have anticipated Neely's unfortunate death. Dante Mills and Lennon Edwards, lawyers for Neely's family, said Penny needs to be in prison for the killing. And interesting that Neely's family has lawyers that are now trying to... So where was this family when this guy, when their relative was doing all this damage and all this evil? Where were they? Suddenly they appear, oh, what an injustice was done to our family member. And this is symptomatic of what happens to the Black family. We've said before, races are families. That's what they are. That's exactly what they are, and that's exactly how they need to be seen, because that's exactly what they are. Races are families. So the Black race has had all these problems of crime and drugs and cannibalism, you know, self-destruction, self-mutilation, killing each other constantly and destroying each other's futures over and over again. But the Black family doesn't do, pardon my French, a damn thing about it. Doesn't do a single thing. Couldn't care less. They complain when it happens to them. But then the white man, the white Democrat cracker, comes and tells him in his ear, hey, you know why you're having all these problems? Because the white man is oppressing you. And it's so ironic. It's always a white guy telling them that. It's not a Black guy. It's not Malcolm X coming and telling them that. It's always some white piece of trash, some white trash liberal professor or Democrat activist coming to tell him to his ear that his problems are because of the white man, and specifically the white conservative Republican. So and so they get fed this thing, and then when their actions have consequences, when one of their family members is has a consequence, a negative consequence, like what happened here, then the family, the black family, starts shouting and complaining at the outsiders when they haven't fixed the problem within their own family. Then it says here, Manhattan District Attorney Alan Bragg, this is the Uncle Tom, said his office is investigating Neely's death, which has sparked public outrage and widespread protests across the city. More than a dozen demonstrators have been arrested. So, because some of you may have heard already that there was a station, a subway station somewhere, where the protesters got off the platform and onto the train tracks as the train was coming into the station, and the train had to put on the brakes to you know, prevent a massacre. You see the picture of all these idiot protesters on the train tracks protesting against the death of Neely. And it is so pathetic. And you see the train, in the background, about to enter the station, and it's just sitting there, waiting for the protesters to leave. And you can only wonder, how. It's a shame that none of them stepped on the third rail. All these train tracks have this so-called third rail, that is the thing that gives power to the train, that allows it to move, and it's always dangerous because if you make contact with it in a bad way, then you will probably die from electrocution. And sadly, none of those protesters died at that moment. But the level of stupidity to do that. And then there have been violent protests where people have been punching each other. And I'm not sure why they're getting into fights and stuff, and it's just this outrage over the death of this man who was a menace to society. But as we've said before, I have absolutely very little, if any, compassion for the Marine who's now caught in this situation, because he, as we were explaining before, got caught up in the moment, thinking of a visible problem. There's a visible man here. I'm going to deal with the visible problem with the techniques that my collective, in his case, the Marines, have taught me. When you find an enemy, an enemy combatant, and you're in hand-to-hand combat, you attack him and subdue him in this way. And one of the techniques is the chokehold. And that's why he did the choke on the guy, and the guy died. And now he's fighting this whole system because he didn't realize that he was not just fighting this one man. He was fighting the man. He was fighting the demon inside the man, more importantly. And then the demon and its manifestation in a whole city full of demonized idiots. And now he's going to face the consequences of that. When he had to deal with the problem in a different way, but he didn't understand that the training that he had, and that's what all these conservatives have, they have a training, an indoctrination, just like the liberals have their indoctrination. They have a training, and they just use the training without realizing, no, you have to be aware that there is a dimension outside of what you can see, and you have to be sensitive to it and react. And think, and when you're sensitive to things that are from the different dimension, you know that sometimes you have to go off script. You have to think in ways that you would not have anticipated before. And as we've said the previous time, it's as if at that moment, as he was holding the man, you could see that the man was being subdued. So there was no need to continue the chokehold. But he kept doing it because his collective training taught him to do that. So he continued with it, but he should have let go and just held him, you know, held him down with his hands on his chest and then spoken to him and said something. And at that moment, he would have been, if he had just opened his heart and mind to some word just coming into his being, I don't know why I have the feeling that he would have started saying, yeah, calm down, man, calm down. And maybe started saying something akin to a Michael Jackson song. And, you know, like you conservative Christians who supposedly believe in the Bible, and I say supposedly because you really don't. I have observed you, and you have been found lacking, deeply lacking, despite your confidence that you are standing in the quote truth. But the thing is that in your Bible, because you're a Christian, you can go and look. It says that Saul had this thing. He had this, what people nowadays call schizophrenia. You know, he suddenly would get violent with people. Like David was working for him, and one day he threw a javelin, I think, at him and almost killed him. So the guy had this paranoia problems. He had, like, he was like Jordan Neely in a sense. You know, he had this demon. And it says in your Bible, Christian, a conservative Christian, that David would play music, and then as he would play the music, the dude would calm down. Saul would kind of you know, go back to normality a bit and be subdued. So, and I'm convinced that I don't know why, I just feel it. If he had been inspired by the truth at that moment, he would have started singing something to the guy, like you know, like a lullaby, but not a lullaby per se. But he would have maybe started singing a song. And if I had been in that situation, I think the first song that would have come to me is "Man in the Mirror" by Michael Jackson, because I always say it to black people. When Michael Jackson said, "I'm starting with the man in the mirror," I'm asking him to make a change. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change. And that's what black people have needed. That's the advice that they needed. You know, their prophet, Michael Jackson, came and told them, this is what we need to do. And they haven't listened even to this day. They keep looking at everyone but the man in the mirror. Everyone is responsible for their problems except for them, for themselves. And that's what would have triggered some sort of difference. As I've shared before, I believe, I feel like that man clearly he had a demon, evil demon inside of him, a dangerous man. But there was a troubled soul inside. And I have the feeling as he was being held with the chokehold that it's as if there's something inside of him that just gave up and said, I can't take this anymore. And I need to rest. I need to rest. And he saw that moment it's as if the man trapped inside of him saw that as an opportunity to get out of this bad situation. And say, oh, I can finally rest a bit because I'm just tired. And that's when he left this world. But and the name, as we said before, Jordan Neely, is very significant because Neely just makes me think of all the Kneelers, all the people who, all the BLM nonsense idiots who were kneeling at the national anthem. And I believe the Jordan Neely, and this is what the reason why I was sharing all these details and reading this story is to emphasize what we said before. Jordan Neely was the product of an environment. That doesn't, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's not accountable for his actions, but you create an environment, and the environment then has an influence on people, and then it causes people to do things that would not normally have happened, or that would have been different had the environment been different. And we read this comment written by someone 9 years ago who saw a dramatic change in this Jordan Neely fellow, because he was a Michael Jackson impersonator. He was well known, apparently. He would be on the subway stations doing his dance and stuff. And then suddenly, apparently 9 years ago, there was a change. And the change, and it was written by, I think, a woman called Corazon. And Corazon in Spanish means heart. So there was something in his heart, and I feel like it's not a coincidence. Something in that man's heart changed. And the fact that it was apparently a Spanish, a lady with a Spanish name, makes you think of Hispanics. And it's like as if what's been happening in Latin America is being projected into the U.S. The decay of the Latin American culture, the countries, they've been completely decaying. And that was kind of projected into this guy 9 years ago. And the 9 years ago is also not a coincidence, because that would make it 2014 at the time of this recording. And 2014 was when Bill DiCamio took over. And that is not a coincidence that this guy had this deformation, a sudden deformation in his heart when Bill DiCamio became the so-called mayor of New York. Because when he came in, the atmosphere changed. And what is important about the atmosphere, what had been cultivated by Giuliani was an atmosphere, I forget the exact name, but I think he called it the broken window policy or something like that. The idea was, if you are careful about applying the law in little things, like a broken window and things like that, then you create an environment of law and order, and then the bigger crimes don't happen. So if you focus on little things, oh, someone is littering, then you go and find the person. Or someone is not respecting the crosswalk, you find the person. And when you do apply the law that is already there about little things, then people become aware, okay, there's an environment of law and order surrounding me, and they're going to be much less likely to think about committing higher level crimes, because the environment has changed. That's why we always say, you want to make change the environment, then things will automatically change. And the change of the environment comes from things that are done behind the scenes. Then they have a physical, like an outward manifestation, and then that outward manifestation then creates the change. But the change in the environment comes from changes first that happen behind the surface, where no one can see. When Bill DiCamio took over, it's as if that environment officially vanished. Because this guy's mother was murdered, choked to death in 2007. So he still had, 7 years of sanity after that. So you can't blame it all, his mother died, so he just snapped. No, it must have really affected him. But he was under control because the environment was still different. And then 2014 came along, and then he was gone. And 2007, that was 1 year before O'Bastard was elected. And then O'Bastard went to soil the White House in 2009. And I believe that when O'Bastard took over, when the imposter got into the White House, then that began a wide-scale change and a degradation of the atmosphere in America, and that affected Jordan Neely. It started setting him up for his eventual collapse in 2014, because his mother had just died 1 or 2 years before that. And the reason why I mentioned O'Bastard here is because shortly before recording this, beginning the recording, I was going through the news, some headlines, and I clicked on some link, and I went down to the comments, and sadly, I tried to find that story just before starting this recording, but I couldn't find it, so I have no idea where I saw this comment. But the comment, I don't know why it was said, but it drew my attention. It's as if I was supposed to find that comment, and it said something about oh bastard. Well, they use the normal name, or the nominal surname, but as you know, I prefer to call him for what he really is, oh bastard. It said, "Oh bastard," kept talking about the quote Joshua generation, and then he went on to say something like, "Oh, but he didn't understand that the Joshua generation was preceded by Moses' laws that say, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not blah blah blah." So he kind of made an argument in that sense. But what caught my attention is his comment, and I said, "Oh wow." I didn't remember Obaster saying that, but it kind of rings a bell as if, yes, I think I've heard that before. And it's kind of weird that Obaster took the phrase Joshua generation and applied it, and saying like we are the Joshua generation that are going to take over the promised land, because as you know, in the Bible it says that the Israelites had their exodus from Egypt and were led by Moses through the desert, and then Moses died, and Joshua took over, and he got them across the Jordan and into the promised land. So, and what I'm trying to say here, and I hope you see what I'm trying to say. Jordan Neely, his very name is saying that he became what he became because there was a man claiming that he would get them across the Jordan, but who instead of getting them to go across the Jordan, taught them to kneel at the national anthem. And I mean that symbolically, because all this nonsense comes from the time of Old Bastard. All this thing about the kneeling and the BLM, rubbish and excrement, all of that is coming from the Old Bastard years, because he began to promote that sort of thinking at a high level. So Jordan Neely is the product of two environments coming together: the environment created by Old Bastard, and the environment created by Bill DeCamio. So these two came together and formed this man who had this tragic death. That death, the responsibility, the blood of that man is on Old Bastard's head and Bill de Blasio's head. It's on their heads and on their hands. And cursed are both of them for the death of this man. Because this man had a purpose, had a calling, had a future, had a life to live. A vision to fulfill, and he lost it. And he is representative of Black America and how Black America lost its calling. The ones who were to be on the watchtower, leading the nation in visions and awareness of what was to come, so that we would be, as a nation, be ready for the great things that were coming for this nation. And all of that was destroyed. Instead of being on the watchtower, all these idiots were kneeling down at the national anthem, blaming the white man for everything that was happening in their lives. And that's why how Black America as a people, as a collective, died. And their promise and their future and all that was in store for them will never be. So that's what I wanted to share, basically, how that name Jordan Neely encapsulates the environment. He was the product, and I say that in quotes, he was the product of that environment. He allowed himself to become the product of that environment. He was influenced, and he might have been a different man had the environment been slightly different. But because we allowed the environment to be like that, that environment was the result of a lot of invisible forces of evil people, and people who condone the evil, and also everyone who voted for Obastrid is also responsible for Jordan Neely's death. Because had Obastrid not been elected, maybe this man would still be alive and he would not have had the breakdown, because the environment would not have been deformed enough. So every son of a bitch and every whore who voted for Obastrid is responsible for the death of Jordan Neely and has his blood on their hands. And cursed are they, every single one of them, because they are responsible for the death of this man. And I can assure you that if we didn't have this lawless environment in New York, when Jordan Neely had walked into that F train car, I think it was an F train, whatever. I used to take the F train a long time ago when I was a kid. When he walked into that train car, the environment would have been different. He would not have felt the confidence to just go out and threaten people, because the environment in that train car and in the entire city would have been different, and it would have prevented him. It would have kind of like restrained the demon inside of him. But now that we have been, you know, here in New York, they've been so loose with crime. It's like the that restraint that was on all this evil has just been lifted, and now the evil is running rampant. And because it's running rampant, it's destroying lives. Because when you contain evil, then you give people who want to live a better life, you give them a chance to break away from that demon. But if you don't restrain the demon gains more power, and starts destroying more lives. And that's what liberals have been doing. And conservatives think that they can stop the demon through visible means, like this former Marine. And their training and their traditions and their stupid constitution and all this heritage, conservative heritage and all this nonsense is useless. It has no power to change this, to fight these demons and fight these forces. And that's why the truth is standing back and saying, okay, you think you know how to deal with this? Go ahead. Make my day. Go ahead. Prove to me that you can deal with this. And I stand with the truth and say, conservatives, you stupid idiots, prove to me that you can control liberalism, that you can rein it in, that you can rein all these demons and all this nonsense that's been going on. Prove it to me. Prove it to me that with your traditions and your patriotism and all your Second Amendment and all this stuff, that you can stop the enemy with it. Prove it to me. And the conservatives go, yes, I will prove it to you. And they keep failing. And now their last hope is Trump. And that's why they want him back somehow. Trump already proved to be a failure after 4 years. He wasn't able to do a thing because he got swallowed up by those invisible forces. He got hoodwinked over and over again by them. He's a fool. But conservatives don't want to give up hope. They want to believe that their system works. And we just need one good guy back, you know. And we just need a good election and get some conservatives in Congress and in the Senate, and we're back, baby. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. The country is going to die in 4 months or less. And it will be over, because the environment was never changed. So that's what we wanted to, quote, briefly talk about. But regarding that story. So it's about the environment, how the environment created this man, and how the conservative side is trying to change the environment through visible means, or fight the environment without realizing that you have to get underneath, you have to deal with the underlying roots, and that's how you then transform the environment, and then have visible, tangible change and victory over the enemy. But before proceeding, I wanted to share something that that I found very interesting. As I've shared on multiple occasions, I don't have cable. I stopped having cable a long time ago for a whole bunch of reasons, mostly monetary, because it was not worth it. But the thing is that, so I'm forced to watch broadcast television, and there's enough of it to kind of keep you, quote, entertained here in the New York area, kind of. But it's mostly reruns that you get to watch. And there's a show that I would watch every now, that I watch every now and then just because there's nothing else to watch at that, on that time, at that time slot. And it's a show called Dr. G Medicine, Medical Examiner. And it's about this lady who, who works at the morgue in Orlando, Florida. And she, you know, and so the show is about her doing autopsies and trying to discover the reasons why people, certain people died. And it was either yesterday or the day before that they had this show. And it just caught my attention. I was doing other things, and then I heard, I saw this incident, and I didn't get to watch the whole show. I just watched, like, it's as if I tuned into it at the exact moment that I needed to see it, as I was in the middle of other things. And I saw the scene where there was this guy who got very violent, because they do, like, reenactments and dramatizations of, you know, of the people that are being autopsied. And so they had this reenactment of a guy who went crazy, went out of control and started threatening people in this kind of like barbecue. There was like a barbecue kind of environment, like a family had gathered together, and they were, you know, just having a normal, you know, barbecue and talking and all of that. And then suddenly somebody got really angry. And so they started saying the guy got violent and started threatening people. And then the weird thing is, in the dramatization, one of the relatives or one of the people at the party kind of grabbed him. And it's so weird, because in the dramatization, this is a show, this is a rerun. This is not a recent show. It was done years ago. And in the dramatization, one of the relatives does the exact same kind of thing. He grabs him by the neck and does the, with his, I wish I could show it to you, but he does with his arms the same shape that the Marine did, you know, that L shape or kind of V shape with his arm holding him by the head, like a chokehold. And he brings him down to the ground. And I said, my goodness, what a coincidence. A guy who suddenly went on a rage rampage. And apparently the guy had schizophrenia. And he was a family member and everything was okay. But the thing is that he was in this, you know, barbecue party thing in the middle of the day. And suddenly, out of nowhere, he got into a fit of rage. And started threatening everybody else there, and that's why they tried to restrain him, and then they tried to restrain him, and he passed out and he died. I said, "Oh my goodness, where have I heard that before?" And then it turns out that, you know, the family got really concerned that they thought, "Oh, did we kill him? You know, like Steve Urkel, did I do that? Did I cause his death?" And that's what this Dr. G lady was trying to determine. You know, what was the cause of death? Did he die from the strangulation and all that? Turns out that they do a kind of a complicated medical explanation that's beyond my grasp, to be frank. But basically, what I barely caught was that this guy had been suppressing his schizophrenia through medication, and so through some drugs, and apparently he had stopped taking his medication, And that's why he's had this sudden fit of rage that day. And then they explained that apparently, and this kind of took me completely by surprise. I did not know that. I'm not sure if it's true. I guess it's true, but it's still kind of shocking to me, to my system, to hear that. They explained that people who have schizophrenia have high levels of dopamine. And maybe I'm confusing it with something else, but I've always associated dopamine with or endorphins. I forget which one was it. I think it was endorphins or but they mentioned that there's this I think it was endorphins that they have this high level of endorphins, and I thought it, if I remember correctly, then endorphins are supposedly good for you, or they create a sense of wellness or something. But people with schizophrenia have this high level of this thing, and the drugs help to suppress that. And the thing is that when you have high levels of that, that increases your heart rate. It does a whole bunch of things. And then they went through this long explanation of how when he had this sudden rise in this chemical in his body, that led to a whole bunch of stress on his heart and all of that, and that's how he ended up dying. So he didn't really die from the chokehold. And I said to myself, you know, the Daniel Penny, the guy who had this choking incident, his attorneys might find this episode interesting or useful in their defense. Because I think that he died, I think, from the chokehold. The chokehold triggered a whole bunch of other stuff, but he really didn't die from the chokehold itself. He died from other things that were already it was just a disaster waiting to happen inside of him. And the chokehold was just like the lighting the fuse, but it's not what killed him, if you see what I'm trying to say. That triggered the series of events that was, and it triggered something inside his body that killed him. See, the Marine didn't understand that. He was just subduing an enemy combatant, and he didn't realize that there were other invisible things going on. He didn't understand those invisible things, and now he's paying the consequences of that. But I found it interesting that that there was this story that aired, and it was so similar to that incident, and I'm just trying to find the details of that story of that episode. I found it online because I had to look it up and say, okay, when was this episode aired? And I was trying to get more information, and all I got was a page on Metacritic.com. And they say that this episode apparently was aired on the Discovery Health Channel, and the air date was an interesting date, October the 18th, 2010. And October the 18th is a very significant date for a lot of reasons, and I associate a lot of things with that date. And if you go to the website where these postings are recorded, you might see some comments on that date, October the 18th. But it was October the 18th, 2010, and 2010 is a very significant year, a negative year, because I remember that it was around that year, if I'm not mistaken, on April 4th, that America experienced a certain death. Like this generation lost its calling. So it's like this. The generation that was around in 2010 died, but there was still hope that the next generation, the one that's currently running things, would make up for what the generation of 2010 didn't do. But sadly, it never happened. And the curious thing is that this episode dealt with two deaths that this Dr. G. Examined. So I'm going to read the summary here on Metacritic.com. This was episode 7, I think, of episode 3 of season 7, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, season 7, episode 3 of Dr. G, Medical Examiner. And the summary says, a 28-year-old man inexplicably erupts into a violent rage during a cookout and then collapses and dies. The man had schizophrenia in addition to a lengthy medical history. Dr. G also considers the possibility that the man was fatally injured as his family struggled to bring him under control. With a long list of possibilities, Dr. G must let the body speak for itself as she searches for the answer. And then they describe the other case. A 22-year-old pregnant woman collapses and dies after experiencing chest pains. Dr. G's colleague, Dr. Norma Jean Farley, is tasked with finding the cause of death. When the answer proves elusive, Dr. Farley reaches out to the woman's family and discovers that the young mother had been keeping a deadly secret. And the deadly secret, I had to do other things, so I couldn't pay attention, but I was able to catch the last part of this episode and see at the end, you know, what was the deadly secret, because they kept you wondering what was the deadly secret. And turns out that she had a heart condition. Strange disease that affected a valve in his heart, in her heart, sorry. And the heart just got worse and worse and worse. And she was having this problem that apparently was discovered was some sort of genetic issue, but she didn't tell anyone about it. She kept it a secret. And I think she was doing laundry or doing something one day. She was pregnant. And then she just collapsed and died. And what happened was that because of her weak heart, it was dangerous for her to be pregnant because her heart, you know, when you're pregnant, the heart flow has to be stronger, obviously, because now there's a baby that needs to be nourished inside. And her heart just didn't have the strength to withhold, you know, to stand that. And then she died. And I find all of this very significant because 22, as we've shared on the website where these sites are, clips are posted, is a number that represents divorce or separation. And it's like and the truth has been divorced from America. America and the truth are now divorcing permanently. And the divorce is going to become complete and official 4 months or less from now. So she represents that. The baby represents the future of this country, the calling, the promises, the great things that were in store for this nation. So she represents America. She represents an America that's become divorced from the truth. And she was white, by the way, this young lady. At least the actress who portrayed her was white, and I'm sure she was also white because it would not have cast a white lady, a young lady, if she had not been a white young lady. But the thing is that she represents America, but America had a heart condition. There was a problem. There's a foundational problem with this country. From the time of the founding fathers, it's a congenital issue. We've had it from generation to generation, and no one has been willing to deal with it. And we've been keeping it a secret. Like, we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to deal with it. Because, our founding fathers were great. You know, like Tony the Tiger, we always go like that. Oh, they were great. And the Constitution, our U.S. Constitution is great. And we keep going about it, about things as if there's nothing wrong. And we've been doing that for decades and decades and decades and decades. And it finally has caught up with us. And the calling that we were called to give birth to could not be sustained with a foundation like that, with a heart like that. We could not make that baby be born. You see what I'm trying to say? That the greatness that was about to be, that we were destined to fulfill and give birth to, could not be possible. You know, we could not give birth to that greatness. It could not be sustained in the womb whilst we held on to a broken heart, a heart that was not designed for that greatness. We had to have a change of heart, but we refused to do it. We kept pretending like there was nothing wrong with us. And this correlates with the other guy, you know, the 28-year-old man who went into, and 28, as we share on the website where we record these, where we post these recordings, 28 is the number of perfection. And it's as if we had, the time had come for us to become perfected, to reach the fullness of what we were supposed to be, to stop just accepting half-assed systems and solutions. But the time had come, but we were not ready. So this man dies at the age of 28 when he was supposed to come into the fullness, the completion of his life, the fullness of his life in the sense of reaching, you know, the fullness of good things, you know, not dying, but reaching the fullness of good things. And he erupts into this violent rage and then collapses and dies. And his family, you know, had this problem of this guilt that they thought they had done it, but it was, the problem was something inside of him that no one could see. So I just find it, very fitting. And 2010, when this was aired, was when, at that time, Old Bastard was in the White House. So it also goes to this thing about the environment being conducive to these things. It was a tragic mistake when Obastrom was elected on November the 5th. The election day was November the 4th, but you know the results came in the next day, November the 5th of November 2008. Remember the 5th of November. That was the day the Republic died. That's when we began this full-blown downward spiral into full-blown death. The Republic died in November the 5th, 2008. Now the country, with its hopes and its callings, is about to die in this year, 2023, in 4 months or less. And it's all the result of the environment that we allowed. When we allowed that son of a bitch, bastard boy from Kenya to take over and soil the White House with his presence and his flies that would land on him and all that, we basically handed over the environment to destruction. And we've been on that path ever since. And we're about, and we can't just go on and on in this. It will eventually end. And as this is happening, another story, big story, is that a couple of days ago from this recording, on May 11th was the last day of what they keep calling Title 42. So on May 12th, the day before this was being recorded, was the first day of Title 42 being over, and now we have apparently the possibility of we have a flood of illegal immigrants just waiting or beginning to cross the border and flood the country with even more illegal aliens. And I felt the need to share a little bit about this Title 42 and what it's all about, because it's also it says so much about what's wrong with this country. And I'm going to read from a news article posted on the BBC, and I know the BBC is not a good place to find good information, but it will have to do. And I would dare say that corrupted as the BBC is, it's still better than most of the mainstream media in America. It's still soiled and corrupted, don't get me wrong, but judging by, when you compare it to the American standards, the BBC is sadly much better, bad as it is. So I'm going to read the article. Is titled Title 42, What is the Immigration Rule and Why Has It Ended? So it gives you, and this is the best article I found. It's sad that this is an article posted in the UK about US law, and it's much better and much more descriptive than anything I could find from a US site, which is so sad. But let me just read parts of these, just to give you an idea of what this Title 42 is about, and how it just speaks of how wrong the whole system is. It says here, this is by Byrne Debusman Jr., that's the name of the person. I'm sorry if I butchered the surname. It says, after more than 3 years, a rule that allowed for the rapid expulsion of many illegal migrants has ended. The end of the COVID-19 pandemic has brought an end to the immigration policy known as Title 42, and the U.S. will now return to its pre-pandemic Title 8 law that governs asylum and deportations. Tens of thousands of migrants have surged to the U.S.-Mexico border, and I'm not going to read the title here, because it's not a valid title. I'll just replace it with the right title. And U.S. White House resident Joe Biden acknowledged that the change on May 11th would mean, quote, it's going to be chaotic for a little while, unquote. So say, what is Title 42? It dates back to a 1944 law known as the Public Health Act, which granted U.S. authorities emergency powers to prevent the spread of diseases. In March 2020, the Trump administration invoked the statute, citing the need to stop the spread of COVID-19 across its borders. When Title 42 was in place, U.S. authorities were able to swiftly remove migrants crossing the border from Mexico, including asylum seekers, using the pandemic as justification. Some 2.8 million people were expelled while Title 42 was in place, according to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. When I read that number, it just shocked me to no end. You have no idea how shocking that number was to me. 2.8 million people were expelled. And I'd go, so how many, if that's the number that were expelled, how many were able to make it in? And if this, there had been no Title 42, those 3 million people would be inside. You see... See how shocking that is? 3 million people. That is 1%, more or less, of the current population in the country. Imagine that. 1% of the population coming into the country over a 3-year period as illegal immigrants. It is mind-boggling. And then they show a picture of the border in El Paso between the U.S. and Mexico. And I'm looking at the picture, and I don't see a wall. And I go, where is the damn wall? Where is it? And I'm sorry for using French, but where the hell is it? The wall that Trump kept promising that he was going to build, where the hell is it? And he's building it in all these... He built it in some parts of the border, but I always, and I think we've shared this before, you should focus on the areas that are most vulnerable first. And El Paso sounds like a place that is very relevant to cover up, and I don't see anything in the picture. That should have been one of the first places you would think about, putting a wall at, and even the name is kind of calls for the wall, because El Paso, if I understand correctly, means something like the passing. That's where these people are passing over into the U.S., and there is no wall there, but that's another story. One of Trump's many failures. And yes, conservatives keep saying, oh, it's the Congress that didn't let him do it. No, no, you stupid idiot. No, no. He could have used any means necessary to make it happen and use any. The law is so broken now that you just have to rummage through the garbage of the laws that we have and find something and use it. And that's what he ended up doing at the end. That's why he built some of it. If Congress stopped him, why was he able to build a single yard of wall? I mean, just think about it. If he was being stopped by Congress, he could not have built a single inch of the wall. But he did, and he bragged about it. So he had the way to do it. He just was slow and stupid in doing it. But that's another story. The thing is, it says here, why is Title 42 ending? After taking office in January 2021, after stealing office in January 2021, Mr. Bikeney and his administration kept the policy in place and continued to defend it as a public health measure for more than a year. Citing a diminished public health risk in April 2022, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, which oversees U.S. health policy, signaled it would end the policy. Oh, and by the way, this reminds me of this tennis player. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. I'm so out of touch with sports nowadays, which is so strange because I used to be so immersed in all that stuff. Djokovic, I forget. You know who I'm talking about, the big, I don't even know if he's Serbian or Croatian, but he's from the former Yugoslavia. I'm so old, that's how I remember that part of the world. But he's from there, and I don't think he'll be allowed to play in the U.S. Open this year again because the stupid policy that a foreigner cannot come into the country if he doesn't have the lethal injection. And so he's been banned over and over, and I think he's been told that he's not being allowed again. So he, top world, you know, tennis world player, cannot come into the country to play for a few, matches of tennis for a week or two. And these people can come and, you know, oh, go ahead, you know, just, you know, walk right in. And they could have not only, you know, some flu virus, they could have all sorts of other third world diseases, but go ahead, come on, you know, come on over, as Christina Aguilera would say. It says here, Republican-led states are trying to find a way to keep the policy in place. A proposed Senate bill backed by Arizona independent Kyrsten Sinema and North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis would allow for rapid expulsions in manner similar to Title 42, but without the public health justification. So then they go on to talk about the impact. Then they say, what is Title 8? Title 8 is decades old. Pre-pandemic law that governs how migrants are deported. It will now again form the primary legal basis for U.S. immigration policy. Compared to with Title 42, Title 8 allows more migrants to request asylum and be screened for credible fear of returning to their country. Those deemed eligible are processed for release and must attend an immigration court, while those who are not are deported. Migrants caught crossing illegally are rapidly removed and are then subject to 5 or 10 year bans if caught reentering the U.S. illegally. Under Title 42, there were no such consequences, which is kind of strange. So I really don't know what to make of this. But the thing is that all of this just points to, first of all, Title 42 is like, it's like the thing that we were saying a moment ago. It's like rummaging through the rubbish of our broken law system and finding something that we can use to stem the tide while we fix the problem. And that's what Trump did, in a sense. But the problem just remains. And And what is so frustrating about this is this exposes the flaws of federalism. Federalism is what creates this environment where the federal government can do this, the state government can do that. But if we had an integrated system where the law is the law, the law is the law's law, the law, the law, the law. I mean, there's no, like, state, this, in this state, this is the law, in this state, this is the law. And this is a federal law as opposed to state law, and all this separation. If we had a legal system where you say, you know, if you're in the country illegally, then you are not here. Then if we were not under federalism, then that could be enforced by state officials, if you see what I'm trying to say. The state government could, you know, like Texas and other places that are near the border who complain constantly about all this immigration because it affects them directly. They could then take charge and protect the border, build the wall themselves. They don't need federal permission for that. It's ironic, you conservative who constantly defend federalism and then at the same time complain about illegal immigration. Well, it's your federalist system that is preventing the state governments really taking charge and applying the law of the land. It's not federal law. It should be American law. It's not just federal law versus Alabama law or versus Texas law. It should be American law. And if you're breaking an American law, then any government official, whether it be state or local or city, should be able to enforce American law and protect the border. No, you can't build a wall because that's within just the federal jurisdiction. A state cannot build a wall to protect itself from the hordes of invaders. And they have to wait for the federal government to do it. It should not be like that. And that is the result of federalism. And the fact that we are the only country on earth where we let people in and bust them inland into the country after coming in illegally to help them set up. Why not just return them across the border? And the thing is, with this Title 42, they could send people back across the border and wait for the immigration. I don't think this was explained too well here in this article, but the idea was that if you wanted to stay legally, under Title 42, you could file your asylum petition, but you had to stay in Mexico while the asylum petition was being processed. And I asked myself, well, if that was the case, if Title 42 was enforced, how the hell are we busing all? Why the hell are we busing all these illegal immigrants across the country? If we had the authority to just return them to Mexico, so there's something all messed up with the system. And we are the only country where we know you're here illegally. We caught you. You broke the law, and yet we give you a mobile phone, because that's what they're giving them, a mobile phone and money, and then they put them up in these nice hotels, like when they bus them over to New York City puts them up in these hotels, and these illegal immigrants are smoking cannabis. I mean, I've seen the reports, the news stories, where they trash even the hotel employees. A lot of them, I would dare say, are also illegal immigrants. Even the illegal immigrants or the Hispanics who work cleaning in the hotels have complained about how the illegal immigrants just trash the place. And because they have all this free stuff that they can use, they just use it up and just trash the hotel rooms and are completely irresponsible. So they are being provided for and after breaking the country's law. What other country does that? And at the same time, people who want to come to the country legally, they have to go through hell. You have no idea how terrible and complicated and painful it is for a person to make his way into this country, his or her way into this country, illegally, and the ton of money that you have to shell out. You don't get a mobile phone. You have to pay out the equivalent of a whole bunch of mobile phones over a long period of time if you're able to survive through the process until you're finally just allowed to be a citizen. So you have this system that is very harsh on people who want to do things right and is very lenient on everyone who wants to do it wrong. And it allows in the it doesn't it's not a system that should that is based on your values, and it should be based on values. It shouldn't be based so much on relatives, or you have relatives in the country that could help, but it shouldn't be the main factor. It should be whether or not you're a person of principle and character, and that's what should be evaluated. That we should have tests. Ways to test a person's character and look at his life history and be able to evaluate and allow the people who might be poor, who might not have much opportunities, many successes in their home country, countries of origin, but who seem to have the character to make it happen. Those are the people who should be allowed in, the people who love this country, the people who value it for what it is, who don't just see it as a whore, as a hooker, or a prostitute, they just go to and have their ways with and then leave. And the sad thing is these people use America as a prostitute, but don't pay her at the end. At least, a prostitute gets her payment at the end after providing the, quote, service. In this case, America provides the service as a whore, and I don't want to be too graphic, but I wish I could say what I'm thinking right now. But America just, well, let me say it, opens up and says, okay, here I am, use me as you want. And then they use her as they want, and then they leave without even paying. They don't care about this country. They see it as a way to make money. That's all they see. Unlike the immigrants of old, like the ones from Italy, the ones from Germany and Ireland, who would come to this country and say, "Oh, America!" They were in love with America. They were in love with the Statue of Liberty. They were in love with the freedom and the new hope and the economic opportunities, and everything about this wonderful land. They were in love with it. But the people who come here, they hate this country. They hate it. They despise it. I have heard Hispanics talking when they think that no one else is listening. I've heard them say horrible things about this country. Horrible things. I know they hate this country. But why would they come to a country they hate? Because they see that they can make money here. And once they make enough money, then they want to leave. A lot of them even have come here and maybe through amnesty or whatever, become legal citizens. The amnesty of 86, for example, 1986. And now that they're older, they want to go back to their countries of origin and go retire and live there. So they just came to make money, and because, the money they make, lasts a lot over in those poor countries, they want to go and have the life of luxury back in their countries of origin with all the dollars they made here. That means they frankly didn't give a damn about this country. They just came here to use it. And because we have a system that doesn't evaluate that. As we've said before, one of the things that should happen is if you come from certain countries, especially the countries who have violated our immigration laws so much, then one of the conditions would be you will not be allowed to return to your country or even visit for 10 years. And you go, "Oh, I can't do that." Well, if you love your country that much, go back to it. Really, if you can't go 10 years without, and they have to sign a document saying that they declare the culture of their country of origin to be inferior to the culture of the country they are now, deciding to live in. oh, I can't do that. Well, then if you think your culture is so great and you can't sign that document, like get the hell out of here. Because why are you here if your culture is so superior and so special? Really, why the hell are you here? If your country is so wonderful and its culture is so perfect, why the hell are you here? Get the hell out. And so that I would force them to sign it. That would be the law. That's how we should have the law, where if you're from certain countries that have been transgressing the immigration law over and over again, show no respect or regard for it. And most of those countries would be Latin American, Hispanic countries, with some, maybe some exceptions. Not sure if there's any country worthy of an exception nowadays in Hispanic America. South of the border, the only country that would deserve some sort of exception would be Brazil, I would dare say. I think every other country should, anyone coming from any other country should be able to sign that document, should be forced to sign that document and say, I declare my the country, my the culture of my country of origin inferior to the American culture, and that's why I'm here, and that's why I want to stay here. And I despise that culture so much that I agree not to return to that country for 10 years. And if they get caught visiting their relatives or whatever, automatic deportation, automatic. They lose their residency, their citizenship, they're done. Because that means that really didn't love the country. Well, what if my relative dies? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let the dead bury the dead. You move on with your life. If you're here, prove to us that you really love this country and that you're leaving all that dirt behind. Because that's how we prevent the contamination. And that's what we've had, this Hispanic contamination. And we've talked about this a lot on the website years ago. Almost 20 years ago, we were talking about the contamination from Latin America on the website where these postings are recorded. We've talked about it, and it's coming true. Now we're going to become, and now especially with this Title 42 thing ending, and now people just readying to flood in, because we're going to be flooded. The environment's just going to be flooded. We've been allowing the environment to be seeped in. We've allowed all this contamination to seep into the environment for years and years, and now it's about to the dam is about to break, and we're going to get flooded, and we are going to become a third world country. That's where we're dying in 4 months or less, and this is all the product of us not caring about the environment. The environment is the key to preventing all of these things. If we had allowed had changed the if, see, conservatives are I'll keep all the foreigners out. We don't care about them. America number one, and that's not right. Liberals are all let them all in because America's so evil. We need to decontaminate ourselves from being so American. So let all the third world trash in so that we can be third world trash too. And so that's not right either. It is a system that allows the right people in, and that creates an environment. So see, as we allow the right people in and allow them under the right reasons, and don't do it based on financial things. The way we are now, we force people to have relative wealth to be able to make it through the process, or somehow have the resources to pay through the nonsense and all the bureaucracy. If we do it through a different pattern of judgment, then we bring in people who will bring with them. Will help to foster an environment of righteousness, of true love for the country. See, and I don't believe in patriotism, but I do believe in love for the country as love for your fellow man. Love for the country, recognizing the country's errors and being willing to judge it if necessary, but you still love it. That's different from patriotism. Patriotism is you love your country no matter what. No, you don't love your country no matter what. You love your country in the context of righteousness. and you're willing to give yourself for it in love, but you're also willing to judge it and curse it if necessary, because you are more in love with the truth than with your country. So it's different. But we will never have that. We'll never have that clean environment. Now it's going to be flooded in with all these illegal immigrants, and the country is on its way to die. We've been trying to, conservatives have been trying to change the environment through natural means. They don't realize that all of this has to be done. We can't fight an invisible enemy with visible weapons. It does not work. And we were unwilling to change our heart. And that's why our heart as a nation was not able to support the life, that baby that we were carrying. And that's why the baby and the country are dying in less than 4 months, just like that 22-year-old pregnant woman. And then all the schizophrenics, all the people who have become victim to this negative environment will die too. At the hands of the people trying to control them through natural means. Just like this Jordan Neely guy, and just like that 28-year-old guy from that episode of Dr. G, Medical Examiner, who died as he was being restrained by his family members. But there was something else going on inside of him. That was not visible and could only be handled through invisible means. And that is basically what we wanted to share on today. And hopefully next time we will talk a little bit more about the legal system, and then eventually get to talk about the election of 1876, the election that we keep promising we'll talk about but never get to. But thank you very much for listening.